Hello and welcome to the Mystic Cast, where you join Jack Stafford and Deborah Littleboy, members of the Aetherius Society, the cosmic religion for the Aquarian Age, as we break down the barriers between religion, science, metaphysics, philosophy, and mysticism, all of which are really only aspects of the self-same quest for truth. Please note this is an independent program not produced or fact-checked by the Aetherius Society. Today, our guest is Seth Shostak. Hello, Seth.
Hey, how are you doing, Jack?
I'm very well, thank you. I think we should kick off with, just to orientate our readers, because most of our listeners are Aetherius Society members and sympathizers. Where are you on the belief spectrum when it comes to UFOs?
Well, I'm sure that the UFOs are something. So I believe the reports, by and large, no reason for people to lie about them. What I don't believe is that they're extraterrestrial craft.
Okay, what are they?
Well, there's a whole laundry list of what they are. If you investigate those where you have enough, if you will, observational evidence to try and pin them down, and that's not all of them, that's just some of them. But in any case, you know, they turned out to be aircraft or orbiting satellites, occasionally meteors and stuff like that. So there is, in fact, a big category of things that can make phenomena visible in the sky, which probably appear mysterious to a large number of people, and those are the UFO reports.
What about those Navy pilots that just came forward in that big, Senate hearings and that? That seemed pretty...
Oof. Well, I don't know what about it would lead you to think that what was being seen was extraterrestrial. These were the videos, there are three that are prominent. They were on the front page of the New York Times, in fact, a couple of years ago. But they were videos made by the gunsight cameras on these fighter jets. And, there are perfectly reasonable explanations for all of them, none of which have anything to do with aliens. So your choice is, well, it could be aliens. Yes, it could be aliens. But so could, the traffic I encounter on the freeways every day. That could be the work of nasty aliens. Not sure why they do that, but, So the facts are that because that's one possibility, shouldn't, lead you to think that that is the cause of these videos, the phenomena behind the videos. The videos can all be explained, in fact, in terms of the behavior of the gunsight cameras that were used to make them. In my opinion, that's what they are.
So I have my spectrum here. I'm penciling you in the skeptic end of the spectrum. Why spend your life involved in something that you think needs you, that you don't believe in? That's like,
well, that would be a good point. Except it's not that I don't believe in the existence of extraterrestrials. Of course, I do. Otherwise, I wouldn't keep this job. It's not that lucrative to begin with. But I'm sure the aliens are out there. I don't think that they're buzzing our airspace for no particular purpose other than to appear in, YouTube videos. I mean, that doesn't make much sense to me. If they've come here, I'm sure you would know that they'd come here. We have lots and lots of satellites up there orbiting the Earth. There's something like 8,000, I believe, 8,000 that are, still working. And almost all of them are looking down. There are only a few that look out into space. So, they see stuff all the time. I'm sure that if some, Klingon craft was pirouetting around our airspace, you would see that and you would know it. And in fact, there would be a lot more attention paid to it.
So what's your objective with the SETI Institute then?
Well, the SETI Institute has actually about more than 100 projects going, but they're mostly in two fields. They're either astrobiology, which is a field, a discipline, if you will, that's interested in could there be life or has there been life on places like Mars, some of the moons of Jupiter. These are all places where you might find liquid water mostly, for long periods of time, geologic periods of time. So it could be that life began on some of these worlds. That would be very interesting to discover, if true, because that would tell you that life, at least, is fairly common in the universe. We don't even know that yet, but anyhow, so that's a good thing. The other project, and the one that I'm mostly involved in, is SETI. And the idea there is not just to find life in space, but to find intelligence in space by trying to eavesdrop on signals that such intelligence might be sending into the cosmos. So that's a really interesting question. I mean, are there really aliens, or are they just, you know, the subject of, you know, movies and books and things like that? It seems reasonable that they might be, and we're trying to find out.
We had Avi Loeb on the show last week, the Harvard cosmologist. Yes. Yeah, he's doing a lot of work to try and, where do you sit with his work?
Well, I'm actually, or have been, part of his advisory committee. What Avi is doing that's different than almost everybody else is that he's actually trying to build some hardware to, you know, examine these phenomena we see in our own skies, not things from far away, things that are, you know, within 10 or 20 miles of where you are. And so, you know, that involves camera systems of various sorts, some radio equipment, stuff like that. And so what he's trying to do is change the whole UFO or UAP, if you prefer, the current nomenclature. Anyhow, he's trying to change that entire body of work, such as it is, into an observational experiment. And by putting up satellites that are instrument, or are building them on the ground, actually, instruments that could see whatever you see in videos, such as you referred to earlier, in much greater detail and with, you know, far more information to try and figure out what these things are. Mm. And that's a great idea.
Yeah, he's trying to film the background noise, the background picture. And then so any phenomena that can come along, he can say, well, this is doesn't fit in with the phenomena we've had on these other days. So,
yeah, he's just trying to learn more. I mean, you know, we started this conversation with you mentioning the videos that most of the viewers have seen, showing some sort of unusual object. Sometimes you even get an idea of its shape, not always, but that's moving around in the sky. So what are these things? Well, with better equipment, maybe you can find out what they are.
But these were taken by pilots, just to go back to them briefly, but these pilots did have, shall we say, had background information. They had every day seen the same skies for many years. They'd seen the same situation. Okay, it wasn't reported in zeros and ones, so we can't analyze it in data, but they swear to us that this was out of the ordinary and wasn't something they'd tracked before. So they should know, no?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think that's a fallacious argument, right? It's not that the pilots are going to lie. I don't think they're going to lie. But what are they trained to recognize? Well, other aircraft, right? That's their job. They're up there because they're part of the defense establishment. So they're trained to recognize, as I say, other aircraft. Okay, they're not trained to recognize alien spacecraft. Nobody knows what they would look like anyhow, right? Mm-hmm. So when they don't understand what they've seen, what do? They jump to the default assumption that's made by the general public, which is, well, they're alien spacecraft. But how do they know they're alien spacecraft? They're not trained.
Well, they were definitely craft. I mean, they were. It's pretty agreed that they're craft. They're not a flock of birds.
Well, that's not so. It's not so clear to me.
Well, what was your explanation?
Well, as I say, there's a whole laundry list of things, but they're mostly craft, but human-made craft. I mean, what would you say?
Are they Russians or Chinese? I mean, what are you?
Yeah. Any, right? I mean, the Air Force is interested in anything in our airspace.
Yeah.
Right. Whether it's Russian, Chinese, that's a secondary consideration. But the first thing to do is to know what's in our aircraft or orbiting the Earth. Some of these big satellites, like the one that caused the stir less than a year ago, and it, you know, it's probably just a big piece of space hardware. I mean, you know, what would you say would be the defining characteristics of something that came from some other world? Right. Well, I don't know that you know. Nobody knows.
Well, I don't want to labor the point, and obviously you've studied this more than I have, but just one of the anecdotes, or testimonials is probably a better way to say it, that from one of the pilots is they saw the aircraft, it shot away, disappeared, and went to a different place, and that place happened to be the place that they were going to rendezvous at. That was their secret in case of disaster return to this point.
Well, I must confess, I'm not familiar with that, so maybe I shouldn't comment. But what, just asking you, really, what place would they want to rendezvous that would be of interest to alien visitors?
No, the pilots were fighting in their flight formation. They always have a, you know, if we get split up, let's meet back at coordinates such and such. And so you'd only know about it if you were psychic.
Yeah, no. Wait a minute, but who was telling them that where they were going to go? The aliens? I mean, I thought you said, I may have misunderstood you.
Yeah, probably I'm explaining it badly. The pilots, when they launch from the ship, they have a rendezvous point to go back to in case they get split up. And then they were flying away, and then the alien ship shot away and went directly to the point to show them that it knew their secret rendezvous point.
I didn't see any reports like that, so okay. I can't really comment.
Well, let's get back onto more. Let's talk about things that I do know about. So the Aetherius Society is the world's oldest international UFO organization. Dr. King from England, he staged the first rally in the 1950s to get the government to admit that they knew about flying saucers, as they were called back then. So, and I think the core of the teachings from the Aetherius Society is that we live in a multiverse. There are multi realms of existence. So and the masters have told us from other worlds that they exist on different frequencies. So just because you go to Mars now at this frequency of vibration, there are cities, temples, spaceships at other frequencies. And science talks about the dark matter and dark energy. So that's the basis of our beliefs.
Let me ask you, people talk about different frequencies. What does that mean? What's vibrating? What's oscillating? What is this frequency due to? And what does that mean? What kind of frequency is it?
Well, you know about astral projection. You've heard of the term.
I've heard of the term.
It's when people have left the body and they float above their body and they look back. People can walk through walls. There's been many studies on this, also with the CIA and remote viewing and many things like this.
There are people who can walk through walls.
In an astral body or your etheric body.
Can you film it?
With an etheric camera.
Okay. Is this for real?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've heard of the term and we exist, we have seven bodies, we exist at different frequencies, and it's the same on other worlds. Just because, I looked at some pictures of sci-fi visions of the future from 100 years ago, and they had, telephones holding up a screen, but with a telephone here, people can only imagine what's 10, 20 years ahead of us. So at the moment, we're not made aware of these realms of existence because it's a big cover-up about it.
Well, okay, you mentioned a couple of other things. To begin with, if there was good observational material on these astral projections, whatever, why is it that I don't find that in a refereed journal somewhere?
Well, probably because it's suppressed.
Why is it suppressed and by whom?
Well, by the people in the other realms, the lower dark forces who don't want us to evolve.
So you can't actually see the other realms? You can't photograph them?
Well, you can.
You can't publish?
You can, if you can, you go and experience it firsthand if you learn astral projection.
But witness testimony isn't good enough for science, of course. That's not science. That's just somebody telling you a story that you could either believe or not believe.
Well, it's good enough to put someone in prison. If you get someone on the stand and they testify for something, it's enough to put someone away for the rest of their life.
Well, that sounds like a conspiracy theory argument, right? It's exactly what that is. There's really good evidence for all this, but unfortunately, if you were to present the evidence, they would put you in jail. What? I mean, there are tens of thousands of scientists around the world who would jump on this immediately if they thought there was any truth to it. Why don't they think there's any truth to it?
But why wouldn't science, why would science not recognize testimony?
Well, testimony isn't good evidence. I mean, if Isaac Newton said, look, F equals MA, but I'm just going to talk to you about it. There's no obvious evidence. There's no evidence I can think of to prove that. Nobody would pay much attention, but he was able to use the motion of the planets, for example, to prove that, yes, F equals MA.
But it's still good enough for a judge in a court of law to...
But a judge doesn't judge scientists, right? Science isn't determined by a judge or by popular vote or popular opinion. Science is determined by observational evidence, experiments,
Experiments, an observation, and then the scientist writes it down. Do you know how many scientific papers have been proved incorrect? They couldn't replicate the conditions in other laboratories.
Well, I'm sure there are quite a few. But all that does is reflect on the fact that science is a human endeavor and people get things wrong. They occasionally get things wrong. But that doesn't mean that all science is wrong, right? I mean, all of classical science, if you will, classical physics, classical electricity and magnetism, all the things that you would take as a freshman and sophomore at university, if you know you're going into a science field, all of that was determined, most of it, I should say, was determined more than 100 years ago. That's old science. It's classical science. But it's in the books, not because somebody said it should be in the books. It's in the books because experiments proved that it was true. Relativity, right? At the beginning of the 20th century, there was a solar eclipse that, was used to test whether aspects of relativity, which was a new idea at the beginning of the 20th century, was right or wrong. And it turned out it was right. Okay, that's the way science works. It works on the basis of experiment, not on the basis of, this guy's a really good guy. We ought to believe what he says.
But doesn't somebody make a hypothesis and then people try and disprove it from all around the world?
That's one way that science proceeds. Actually, in many cases, it doesn't proceed that way, but that doesn't matter. That's all a side note. I was saying classical physics, classical electricity and magnetism, that's not based on somebody's, being an honest person or good testimony from this guy over here. It's all experiment.
Experiment. Somebody came up with a theory, a hypothesis, and people tested it. Well, then that's also the way that I'm saying about the multidimensional universe.
Well, what's the experiment?
Well, that's a good question. I'll come back to you on that.
Okay. I mean, people throw around that term a lot. It's a multidimensional, Captain. It sounds like a line from Star Trek. It's great. But, what does it mean and how has it been proven?
Okay, all right. Well, I'll come back to you on that. I mean, I don't have. It explains a lot of things. You know how the craft can flip away. Go invisible.
Well, how does it explain that? I mean, how does a craft go invisible?
Well, it flicks to another frequency, another.
Well, but when you say frequency, frequency has a very precise meaning in science, and so what is it the frequency of? I mean. If I tell you, here's some light I'm going to shine in your face, and you say, oh, well, the dominant frequency of that light is such and such, right? That's something you can measure. That's a very specific claim. But what does it mean to say that, things I see in the sky that I don't understand are jumping to a different frequency? I have no idea what that means.
Well, if we're talking now about matter, if we were talking about sound, maybe 100 years ago, 200 years ago, the idea that radio waves, gamma rays, such and such rays can exist within the same space, but at just at different frequencies, it would be hard for them to comprehend, no?
I think they could comprehend it, actually, but I don't know what it means. I still don't know what it means. They exist at different frequencies. I mean, I don't know. The delivery of my newspaper seems to be at only one frequency once a day, all right? Okay, that's a frequency that you can measure and you can test. But to say that, the dogs running through the neighborhood, they exist at different frequencies. I just don't know what that means. To me, it sounds like the commandeering of a term that is used in science to try and advocate for something that doesn't seem to be science.
Well, they say the metaphysician knows today what the rest of science will know tomorrow. I mean, if you take the electromagnetic spectrum, this huge, if you stretch it out, we can only see a tiny sliver of the electromagnetic spectrum, right?
With our eyes, with our instruments, we have access to almost the entire spectrum. But
right,
okay.
So consciousness exists at different frequencies of this, across this spectrum.
What does that mean? Consciousness exists at different frequencies. Tell me.
Well, when you die, do you believe in reincarnation?
No.
Well, just because you don't believe it doesn't mean it might not be true.
That's true. I mean, just give me the evidence. That's all I ask.
Well, they are studying it in universities.
But that's just an easy thing to say. What does it mean?
Well, there's the University of Perpetual Studies in, where is it?
But Virginia. That's an organization. That's not science. Tell me what the best evidence is for this, from your point of view, if there's somebody on the bus.
It would all be anecdotal. It would all be people's testimony. It would all be.
Well, 35% of the American public believes that ghosts are real. Okay. And what would you say to that?
Take medicine, for example. If you do a trial study, you've introduced new medicine, which is Would you admit that's a branch of science?
It's applied science, yes.
So if you do a medicine, if you introduce a new medicine, you give it to 100 people as a test group, you rely on their testimony whether that medicine worked or not.
No, not their testimony. You rely on the evidence.
I had these symptoms. I had that. I got these side effects.
But there's quantitative measurements involved there. People, you know, say, well, it may be better, but you would of course take their temperature for example. And if their temperature was not normal, you say, well, you're not better, right? It isn't all anecdotal. Medicine.
They rely
is not anecdotal.
A lot on testimony in these research groups.
I personally wouldn't use a medicine that was based on anecdotal results, right? I mean, if I have something wrong with me, I want to take a medicine that actually has clinical information attached to it. The people have tried using this medicine for this, you know, disease, whatever it is, and these are the results, and these are established independent of what somebody wants to tell you about their frequencies.
Well, then they give it to 100 people and they say, oh, this person got vomiting and diarrhea after it. This person got, you know, they weren't in their home watching them take the medicine. It's all anecdotal.
No, that's not anecdotal.
Somebody filled in a form and said,
yes, that's right.
I experienced diarrhea. The doctor wasn't there.
Well, of course not. So some of them might be lying, right? But if you have a large enough group of people, if you have thousands of people, which is maybe what a medicine trial might involve, you know, they're not all lying.
All right. Well, then to go back to the University of Virginia with their perpetual studies, they have people, they've documented many cases where people are born with, for example, birthmarks, and they tell them about, you know, young children born with these birthmarks, maybe they were shot in their last life. And then they take the children back to the village and they interview the parents and the facts match up.
So you believe that testimony about past lives has some validity in science?
Yes, 100%.
All right. Okay. Well, we're definitely in different frequencies.
Yeah. Yeah, because if there's a UFO sighting and 100 people see it, this has happened many times throughout history, 100 people, 200 people, 300 people see it. And then afterwards they say it was a flock of birds or it was, you know, it was the light in there. But people are not, it's actually hard to convince people to do that, to stage that, or when people have seen an incredible sighting.
They don't have to stage anything. They just have to interpret something. For example, you know, a couple hundred years ago, it wasn't terribly long ago, actually, people noticed that rocks would occasionally fall from the skies, right? And, you know, people say, well, you know, what is that? Mm-hmm. And it was just, you know, if you will, meteors breaking up in Earth's atmosphere. But they may not have known that, and they certainly didn't know that when these phenomena were first observed, okay? So it isn't that anybody's making something up or that they're in different frequencies, whatever that means, right? They just observed a phenomenon that they didn't understand at first. And, you know, with greater knowledge of what's in the solar system, it became obvious that, well, okay, you know, there are rocks cruising around the solar system. Sometimes they appear as comets. Sometimes they appear as meteors. And sometimes they break up in the atmosphere. I mean, they often break up in the atmosphere. That's the explanation that science would offer to that. But, you know, it isn't that there were untrustworthy reports or anything like that. The rocks were right there on the ground. You could pick them up and look at them. They were often still warm if you got to them soon enough, right? That's because of friction in the atmosphere. So on the basis of that observation and then telescopic observations that showed that there were a lot of things cruising around the solar system other than the planets and moons, then we could come to an understanding of what these meteor falls were. But, I really don't understand how that's relevant to the question of alien visitors.
Okay, so you asked me the question, what would be an experiment? How could I prove to you about the other realms? So maybe I could just ask your reasoning. You know, you work with the SETI Institute. What to you would denote proof of extraterrestrial life?
Well, to begin with, if in fact they landed in the backyard, that would be a very direct proof. I don't expect that they're going to land in the backyard. They've had 4.5 billion years to land on Earth, and we don't have any good evidence that they ever did. Maybe they did, took a few photos, and left. That could have happened 100 million years ago. Nobody would know. But, you know, that isn't a very good argument. That's saying, well, here's one possibility. That's not really very good science. Okay. So, but if you were to, for example, see, some spacecraft under its own power, not a falling rock or anything like that, in our airspace or anywhere in the solar system to begin with, that might be very good evidence for alien existence and even presence. But we don't have that.
What was the one that Avi Loeb talked about? I forget the name. It's got this very strange
name. You mean Oumuamua?
Yes, very good.
Oumuamua was an asteroid about 10 miles long.
But didn't it slow down and speed up, accelerate out?
No, it sped up. Yeah, it changed its speed a little bit, but that was completely understandable in terms of pressure, the pressure of light.
Well, he did write a book about it, and he seemed unconvinced that that was the...
I don't think Avi Loeb, if you got him right here today, and you said, Avi, do we have good evidence that Earth is being visited? His answer wouldn't be yes.
So video evidence would not be enough for you?
No, you can video anything. The question is, what are you making a video of? And how do you know?
What else would there have to be? Radar? I mean, what, more specifically?
No, but these are all just different technologies. The question is, how do you prove what you're seeing? You can use radar to look at the skies. Of course, there's a lot of radar that is looking at the skies. It's part of air traffic control, right? But that doesn't mean that they found aliens. Don't you think that if they had tens of thousands of research scientists wouldn't be beavering away on that problem?
So what specifically would be evidence to you?
Well, for which incident?
Well, for the craft that the Navy sea. So the Navy recorded this. The American military recorded these videos. And they also recorded on radar and other things. What additionally should they have done that would have proven it to you? What was
missing? Well, these were commercial aircraft or military aircraft. I think they were mostly fighter jets, actually, that have gun sight cameras and so forth.
And it seems pretty state-of-the-art to me. I mean, it doesn't seem like we have much better
technology.
Well,
you're talking about the instrumentation, but the question is, what is the result and how does it affect the conclusions, right? And of course, those radars are going to see other aircraft. That's what they're designed to do. Hmm. So they do see them. And if you posit one of these military jets flying above wherever you are right now, they could see, on the order of 100 miles in front of them, right, before the curvature of the Earth makes that impossible. So there are going to be other aircraft within the radar range of this airplane. I mean, that's the reason they've got radar, right? Okay, so they're going to see a radar reflection, which will look like another object because it is another object. And the question is, so what about that is unusual? What about that tells you that aliens have come to Earth to buzz our skies?
Well, it flew under the sea. It flew incredible speeds.
How do you know the speeds?
Well, it says on the side of the screen.
Okay.
The Navy pilots recorded it. I mean, they're experts.
They did. I don't think they recorded the speeds. But the thing is that in order to know the speeds of something in the sky, you need to know the distance. Either that or you need to know the intrinsic side of the size of the object. That's just
This was state-of-the-art American military hardware.
But we're not talking about the hardware. We're talking about the logic.
So you agree that it was aircraft, but you don't think it was extraterrestrial?
Yeah, I think it was something in the skies, and I'll call it an aircraft because if it was just a meteor falling onto the Earth, it would have a completely different trajectory. So yeah, it could be explained. It could just be a flight from New York to San Francisco, completely consistent with the observations.
Did you study this? Did you look into it?
I did look into it.
It flew through the sea.
No, I didn't find any evidence for that. People talk about that as if it happened. I don't know where that came from, to be honest. Maybe you can tell me.
All right, well, I don't have it on hand, but yeah. Okay. Well, it has been wonderful speaking to you because you've made me... It's very important to speak to people with opposite beliefs to you because it makes you question your own beliefs. And makes you better at explaining yourself in future. For the next guest that I get to speak to in this, I'll be here.
I would also be aware of the fact that if you use the word belief, you're probably not talking science. This has been pointed out many times. Right? Science isn't a matter of belief. Science is a matter of, can you measure what it is that you're talking about? And can you predict what you might see next? Those are the sort of hallmarks of science, not belief. Nobody cares what you believe.
Belief is the triangulation. I have maybe this equipment and then this pilot and they both point to this one thing, and they say it's right. Whereas knowledge will be as if I was actually there myself and I saw it. And I haven't seen it.
Well, what you're saying is that you're a better instrument for measuring what is true than whatever instruments are on that aircraft.
No, it's interesting, but a belief. I have to take people's experts' opinions for things, and I trust if they've told me this and this, and they're experts in that and that, and they say that A plus B equals C, then I believe them. But unless I go through all their years of training, have the experience myself, then that's the difference between knowledge and belief.
Okay.
That was a good answer.
Well, I don't think so. I don't think it falls within the province of science. Science is, you see something in the sky, you don't understand it, so you do what Avi Loeb is doing. Mm-hmm. You build instrumentation that can get you more data. Fundamentally, right. That's what he's doing, right? And with right. more data, you often can come up with the explanation for what it is that you originally saw and were puzzled by. It's to explain the puzzle.
Well, the trouble with science is also a matter of belief, because Avi Loeb has received terrible abuse from other cosmologists, other proven scientists. He's been on the same stage as them, and he's been ridiculed. But he, you know, that it's two cosmologists arguing about, to get two scientists to agree on one thing is, it's not as if science is a unified theory that we can apply to everything as like a rule of law.
Well, I think it's better than most law, actually. If Avi Loeb has been ridiculed, the reason is not any of that. The reason is simply that he's a very talented theoretician. And they think he would do better to spend his time on the sorts of problems that cosmologists often work on, which is not UFOs, of course. And so, you know, that's all personal reasoning. It has nothing to do with the fundamental premise here. Is it worth spending money, time, and the effort to try and get more data on these UAPs, if you will, that people see in the skies? And there's, to my mind, I think Avi is to be commended for, you know, sort of ignoring all that pressure from other scientists who think that Avi, who's a very talented guy, as they say, is wasting his time on something that has no basis in reality. Mm. That may be the case, but at least his experiment will be an experiment. Mm. And it will, you know, throw some light, will improve our understanding of whatever these phenomena may be. Mm. They're probably prosaic, as I say. That's my belief. They'll turn out to be other aircraft and things like that. But having said that, that's not as good as being able to actually demonstrate that that's the case by building the instrumentation that would give you the data to prove that. And I think that's what's going to happen. I think, you know, because the time scale for Avi Loeb's experiment to actually start deploying instrumentation in a number of places, the trouble is that, you know, he can't afford to put it in a spacecraft. And even if he could, one spacecraft, you know, one set of these sensors wouldn't be enough. He'd probably need more. But, you know, he might put these instruments on the tallest building in Boston. But what if the aliens are constrained to fly to the other hemisphere of the Earth? He won't see them, that kind of thing. So you really need to deploy this in many different places. It's like a telescopic survey of the skies. And, you know, he probably doesn't have the money to do that. But at least he's making an effort to do the experiment.
Okay, well, you know, as we've heard from our communicators through the Aetherius Society, that they'll be seen when they want to be seen, because you asked me the question, as everyone does, why don't they just land in Central Park? You know, why don't they just show themselves? And it all comes down to karma, which is how the universe is run, karmic law.
And, well, karmic law, I don't know a single cosmologist who appeals to karmic law. That's not science.
Well, they're all governed by it.
Well, prove that to me and I'll agree with you.
But if you extrapolate the theory that if they did, because they come from, obviously they're much more highly evolved than us, if they did come down, announce themselves to us and did help the US military and such, gave them their technology, went into the universities, raised everyone's teachings, and then their weapons were used in a war to kill other people, then karmically that would be a very bad situation.
Is any of that true?
Well, yes.
What technologies have they given us that we use to kill other people?
Well, they haven't done that. They can't land. They wouldn't do that. They wouldn't land among us.
How do you know they wouldn't do that? That sounds like alien sociology.
Well, this is how they communicate through the Ethereum Society. This is the messages they've given us. This is the wisdom of the masters.
Okay.
I might be losing you now.
Yeah. Yes, you definitely lost me because we're not talking science anymore, obviously.
Yeah. I think we've gone as far as we can go. And again, Seth, I appreciate you for your time and I appreciate you for testing me on a few things. You've made me give me food for thought, and I hope I have given you some as well.
Okay, Jack. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.